Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a show dedicated to helping you escape diet culture, gain trust with food, honor your body, and live a brighter life. Hello, hello. Welcome back to The Kitchen Table. I'm your host, Alicia Brown, and I've got a great episode in store for you. I know already because I am with Stephanie. I am Stephanie Michelle with one L is her Instagram handle. She's a diet culture and binge eating recovery coach, as well as she helps people also improve and work on a more positive body image as well. I've known Stephanie for a long time now, it seems, on social media. I'm one of her biggest fans, so it is so fun to have her on today on the show. And she does this thing on her stories. Again, you can follow her at I am Stephanie Michelle with one L on Instagram. And she does closet coaching, she calls it. She's actually in her closet as we're recording this podcast right now. I just absolutely love it. But she does closet coaching just for all of us that are struggling with food and body stuff. And in one of her closet coachings, she was talking about grief. And I was like, oh my gosh, like the resonance hit so deep that I was like, we have to talk about this on the show at the kitchen table, because grief is such a real thing. Even like not like huge food and body grief, grieving our former smaller bodies potentially, or grieving the end of a great meal. It's even like grieving smaller things in life. And so I want to talk about grief with Stephanie today on the show. And Stephanie, I just want to thank you for coming back on. You've been on like how many times now? I think this is the fourth time you've been on.
Three or four? Yeah. And it's always fun. This morning I was like thinking about my day and I was like, oh, I got to talk to Alicia later. It's just a joy. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Can you just do a recap from your closet coaching about what you talked? Do you remember the term that you posted? There was an actual, was it a Greek term?
No, it was Japanese. Yeah. Okay. So what happened was, I got a question I have, from one of my Patreon subscribers who wrote in a question, and I address, questions from my Patreon subscribers on closet coaching. And it was a question I hadn't gotten before. Usually like I'll get a lot of themes, you know, typically, you know, around body image or, you know, getting, you know, changing bodies, binging, whatever it is. Typically they come up in patterns, but this one was a different kind of question. And she asked about, she said, do you know anything? Because I feel like sometimes my urge to eat comes from avoiding a feeling of grief. Like even when I'm finishing a meal and the meal has been so delicious and the meal ends and I just feel this invading sense of like a letdown. Like she said, the closest I can describe it is like grief. And she said, and I feel this way about other things. Like when I'm coming home from, like being out with some girlfriends and having a really good time. And then I come back home and it's like that whole, like, okay, now I'm back home and this is over. She's like, and I just liken it to grief. And does this resonate? Do you know anything about this? And when I read it, I was like, I've never spoken about it really necessarily in this way. I've never named it grief, but I strongly resonated with it. And I likened it, I guess, to sensitivity. Like in my mind, it was like, this is what I have always called like high sensitivity or sentimentality, or in many cases growing up, I just had called it, it's my too muchness. Like it's just me being too much, too dramatic, too oversensitive. So I put this out, I did this closet coaching to talk about this and asked my, you know, I asked, you know, does anyone resonate with this? Or if not, just feel free to skip over it. Right. And I got more responses from that episode than I have ever gotten in over a year of doing these closet coachings. And so one follower had written in and said, do you know, there's a term for this, it's spelled like mono, no aware, M-O-N-O-N-O and then aware. Like, I don't know how you say it, but it's basically, it's the wistfulness of the ending of things, which I just thought was the most poetically like spot on description that I had heard. And when she said this to me, I was like, oh, the wistfulness of endings of the ending of things. And I was like, that speaks to me on so many levels. It was like my whole like life flashed before my eyes. I was like, oh, that explains all of these things, all of these moments of my life that I have previously not really had a name for. And I've been thinking a lot about it ever since. I'm actually planning to write about it in my next newsletter. And I've just been getting a lot of stories from people who are describing just these micro moments of not necessarily grief in the, in terms of large grief, like acute grief in terms of like losing someone or changing a job or, you know, even we'll talk about grief with body image of losing your, you know, the idealized version of your body and sort of that sense of grief. This was something a little bit more, almost a little bit more mundane and things that I think we tend to bypass because they don't feel like they deserve that amount of wistfulness or sadness. And it's not something that as a culture, I think we talk about because I think it's reserved for the highly sensitive. And so it became this whole, like, yeah, a whole can of, you know, it opened a Pandora's box as far as I'm concerned, in terms of like where people feel this grief and why it's happening and what we can do to deal with it. And identifying with other people that it happens to and not feeling so alone with it.
Do you think this kind of grief builds? Like, you know, it's like, if this, you called it like mundane grief, but I see it more of as like also routine grief. Like this could be kind of frequent, multiple times a week. And then there's also grief from like with the food and body stuff too. And I'm just seeing this because I've experienced this in such a big way, especially like these beautiful summer nights that we've been having. And with the change of the season, we don't get the summer all the time. I'm already grieving the end of summer and it's literally just started. And so I feel this. And I think that there's a connection between grieving the end of a night or a beautiful sunset, or as it's defined, like the transiency of life, the fleetingness of beautiful moments that we want to hold on to and can't, that builds momentum. And if we don't acknowledge it, does it build if we don't address it? And then does it make the food and body stuff that we encounter like even bigger? I mean, do we explode in some way? We have to have a way to cope in some way. And so many of us cope with our food and body desires to control. So where does that land with you?
Yeah, well, I think anything that goes unnamed and unrecognized recognized builds. So anytime I think that we're experiencing emotion and we don't, we either minimize it, ignore it, suppress it, or shame it, we put it in some kind of box, you know, inside of ourselves that I think builds and builds and builds until, you know, it explodes in a binge or it explodes in an, you know, some kind of tantrum almost like that we have. And I think that that's what emotions tend to do unless they're given space to exist. And I think that the interesting thing about this particular concept is that I think it tends to be something that we don't even have a name for. It's not something that I have ever been talked about. For example, like, when it came up for me, I was thinking about how, I mean, the earliest memory I have of this, I mean, I have really early memories of this feeling overcoming me as a child. Mm-hmm. And I come from a family where sensitivity wasn't really like, you know, it didn't get the job done. Like, let's go. It was like a little bit of a, like, come on, no nonsense kind of way of being. And I was a sensitive child and I would have these large emotions in response to things. Like at the end of school years, I remember getting really, really like nostalgic and sentimental about it. And when I would have like some kind of weekend, like a sleepover with my friends, things like this. And I would come home and I would just have this big letdown at the end. And I would always have this feeling. And I remember I used to try to like tell my mom that I was sad. I think I may have called it loneliness. Yeah. And it was kind of like, what are you talking about? It was like, what are you talking? What is that? How, why? What? You know, it was like, I couldn't explain it, but it was like, I don't know. I just feel this something. And I think to not have ever had a name for it and to feel like, okay, well, this is not apparently this isn't what people feel. Like, this is not a thing. I guess this is okay. Let me try to put it somewhere and pretend it's not there. And I think that pattern, I think probably if this is something that has, I think it can be a pattern for people who are generally sensitive, which tends to start in childhood. If it's not acknowledged or if it's not well received, then it goes into some place where I think that it builds and builds and builds. And I think it can become a feeling. I talk a lot with my clients about feelings of existential loneliness and this feeling of I have an emotion that I'm unable to explain or validate. And that feeling ends up turning into some kind of loneliness because I feel so alone with it because it's never been validated by anyone before.
And it's hard to share. And so you're the only one kind of bearing it yourself. It's not able to be thought of in a way that seems accurate. And I can so relate to that feeling. It seems like there's this unnamed void. And I so agree with you that, like, even when we were young, and I think I had a similar upbringing too, of like, your family's all here, fix it, you know, move on to the next thing. What else do we got to do? You know, like, it's not like the download of the feelings. And wow, I see myself doing that as a mom, like, all the time. Like, oh, she's only 1 year old, but okay, Amelia's crying. What do we need to do? Who's got the pacifier? Yeah. What's the next thing? I mean, she's not really at that age where I'm going to download her feelings with her necessarily, but it's so easy to just like want to skate across these things. But I think the reason why the Pandora's box you said was opened was because maybe you and your story, Stephanie, for the first time, validated what people were feeling and they could not name it. And I think I was one of those people. And so now that we have named it and validated this feeling, this sense of loss, and we've seen it parallel this sense of maybe loss or then as consequence desire to control or cope with food and body stuff, like how can we actually address that grief so it doesn't build? What do we do after, okay, we've named it, what do we do now? Like, what's the next step? Like, after all of these little closing events in our life, noticing the transiency of it all, noticing that things are going to come to an end, rather than have it affect how we treat our bodies, how we treat ourselves, or having to cope with maybe food only, or maybe, you know, not in a positive way. How do we manage it? How do we manage this grief?
Yeah. So I think that naming it is part of it, because I think that being able to say, you know, oh, I'm turning to food right now, or I'm body checking right now because I'm feeling grief. I'm feeling this letdown. And I love the term, downloading your emotions. I love that. Absolutely. Is that what you said? Downloading your emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes time. There's not a lot of space in there.
And it needs like that. It needs to be downloaded. And I think what happens is, I mean, if you know, we talk about like our nervous system, right? Having a window of tolerance of being able to hold space for emotions. Yes. And I think that for people, particularly sensitive people with smaller windows of tolerance, right? So people who are more easily triggered or more easily set into a state of hyper or hypo arousal by their emotional state, the download time, we need more. And we also need to, but in the meantime, I think we're also quick to bypass it. So like you're describing, it's like, okay, well, how do we fix it? How do we fix it? And I think the crux of this comes where we learn maybe as children or at some point in our lives that having these emotions, there's not really time for that. And so we gotta just either fix it or just completely ignore it or like minimize it and be like, oh, you're fine. You're fine. I mean, my mother used to always say that to me. I love my mother so much, but she still to this day says like, you're fine. You're fine. And you know, and I'm like, but I just need a minute. Like I just actually need, and I don't think I needed, probably didn't need that long to download the emotion, but I think I needed to download it. And I think it probably took me longer than it took her, or it would take the average person. And so I think that giving yourself the space to download it instead of turning to the food to numb it out or distract it, or turning to the body checking to somehow just distract, because that's the habit, right? It's like, okay, well, we learn that we have an emotion that's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. And we know that this emotion maybe shouldn't be there, or it's troublesome in some way. So we need to do something with it. We need to put it somewhere. So instead of processing it and letting it exist and breathe, we are like, okay, let's shove it down here. And in the meantime, I now have this leftover energy and I'm going to direct it towards food and eating and shoving it down, or I'm going to like make sure my body's good, because this is a way that I can channel that energy into something that society tells me my body needs to be a certain way and I need to manage my food in this certain way. And it's like, it just will get rerouted there. And I think that if we can name that we're having this feeling to begin with, we can say, I give myself the permission to download it now and understand that it will pass given the opportunity to download. You know, it's like those things do come to an end too. And so if we don't have the practice of being able to feel an emotion that it doesn't feel great or that feels confusing even, and we don't have the practice of being able to take that and let it ride, then we are going to find things to cover it up and to reroute the energy. And I think that's where we are sidetracking ourselves, because we're not just dealing with the grief or the moment of, and these are small things. Like these are right. moments that, I mean, I think I spoke to you about this, but like, I think I spoke about it on my closet coaching and we were maybe messaging about it. We're like, I watched Hamilton last summer.
Yes.
I can't tell you. I watched that movie and it like, and so music is a common one, I think, where we have, even when a song ends sometimes, like that's the grief will flood in, right? When it's a, when it's song is just getting, it's just, you're just, I don't know, you're singing at the top of your lungs or it's just filling your soul. And when it's over, like, or when you have to get out of the car or like, you know, somehow you have to turn the music off because it's time to go, you know, whatever it's time to go
transition.
Do. To transition. Exactly. And it's like, oh, like it's a deflation and it's sad. It, like, it feels like sadness to me. Like it feel, and I've always been someone who's like, why the heck am I so sad? There's a song. And I remember I talked to my therapist about it at one point. I was like, I'm really sad about Hamilton. I can't, why am I, why, this is nuts. Like, I was like, I cannot, why am I behaving this way? Why is this emotionally so rattling? And I think that I just was so unwilling to almost acknowledge that I was having feelings about something because I had emotional connection to it. And then it was gone, that I didn't give myself proper time to download it. And so, yeah, I think it comes from that. I think it comes from just not knowing what to do with such strong emotions and not knowing why they're there or that it's normal to be there.
I think the next thing that you said, you know, you said you communicated that emotion about grieving the end of Hamilton. I think maybe that's something that's useful too, because, you know, I actually, now that I really think about this, I see other people grieving in some way the end of small things too. My husband actually, we were at a wedding last weekend and I was getting tired. We had Amelia also. I was like, you know what? Like, should we peel out? And he was like, no, like we're going to stay till we're the last ones here. Right. Like, he didn't want to like make that transition to like have the night be over and this is it. And everything is over and everything is over. And, you know, we got into the car and he's like, gosh, I didn't want that night to end. I'm really sad that night ended. And we could actually have a conversation about it. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know, you know, maybe that your intentions were to stay that whole night at the wedding. You know, like I didn't want the night to end either. Like there was something fun about being able to talk about that experience of like, gosh, I just didn't want it to end. It was just so beautiful. Or for everybody here, you know, if anybody has seen Hamilton, they had an emotional connection to it. Like, let's just take that cat out of the bag. It's so beautifully done. Yeah. And just saying, oh my God, I had an emotional connection to Hamilton. My heart feels like, you know, it's swelling and it's maybe heavy and my head feels a different way than it did when I just, you know, walked into this theater, when I turned it on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
My life is kind of different, you know, having that conversation. Do you feel like that's also healing and helpful to like, just even these small things that we've been told, maybe you shouldn't have those things, make it through, next thing, distract.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. And the reason I think it's helpful to with the communication piece is I think it taps into a part of what the grief can also be around, which is about connection. So sometimes I think when we're having these moments of grief, it is a mourning of some kind of way we've connected with someone or something. It's been an event, like, you know, if you're having this day with your family and it's like, wow, we have just spent this beautiful day together as a, and like, that's a bond that was created between you. And so it's validating to hear back, you know, or to have it validated to you that, yes, this was I felt it too, you know, like that is, I think, a human connection piece that is part of sometimes what the grief is even around. So, you know, I feel like what happens a lot is that it's, the grief can center around, it can happen when there are these moments of connection, human connection, that are then mourned. And to have someone else say to you, yes, like that existed. That's not just, you know, that's not just in your head, or that wasn't just your experience. I felt it too. Is, I think, yeah, can be part of this way of healing it, because it validates it. It says, yeah, okay, me too. That's I felt that, you know.
I think our souls and our hearts just need that, and need that, the validation that bond, that connection was made, and that it also like can continue. So maybe the sunset is over, the night is over, the wedding is over, but there can be something that, you know, like is so part of our humanity, our human existence, that we can still hold on to and cherish. That gives me a way to kind of mend the grief too, of knowing that, oh, the thing that I really loved about this was the connection. how can I continue to foster a connection with myself and with others in a similar way moving forward? Maybe it's not about the weather. Maybe it wasn't about the sunset. Maybe it wasn't about all those things. Maybe that all created this moment, but maybe it was the connection, you know, with nature, with other people, with the music in that moment that I worry I can't get back, but how can I keep my connections alive?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like, yes, I resonate with that a lot. Like this idea of, I think sometimes the reason it feels so sad is because, and I don't know exactly where this would come from, and I have theories about it, I guess, but I, you know, there is this feeling of like, if I don't hold on to it, it's lost. And I need to cling to it because I'm afraid I won't get it back. And I've heard this described from some of the people who actually resonated with the story in terms of food and in terms of feeling like it's hard for me to end a meal because I feel like I have to get, you know, if you're in a scarcity mindset or a restrictive mindset, it's like, I'm experiencing this food and it's, I'm having like, it's hitting the dopamine centers of my brain. Like there's pleasure happening.
Right.
And what if it doesn't come back because historically perhaps it's been restricted, or maybe that is true in other realms too. Maybe there has been connections or emotional bonds that have been not fully met in our lives, or things that have been broken, a hurt that has existed in, you know, after a period of connection. And maybe there is a fear that like just sits and spins around, I need to hold on to this because it may not come back. And I think that part of dealing with this, when you can name it, is to say, this will come back. I will experience this again. There will be more. And it's funny because, you know, you really do feel like there won't be more, you know, I know that feeling, and there always is. Like there's life seem, you know, it, there's endings as much as there's beginnings, and things renew and things ebb and flow and things rise and fall. And I think that this feeling is the fall feeling. You know, it's the feeling that things are retreating in some way, but it will rise again. And I think that that's a pattern in our lives that for some reason I notice people with food and body not trusting, you know, that there is a pattern to life in that way. And there's a rhythm. And I think we get stuck sometimes in this idea that the fall is the fall, you know, and like, we're not going to recover. And that, no, we can trust that life will bring it back.
Two things are coming up for me: abundance and presence. Mm-hmm. Abundance has been really helpful in my own personal intuitive eating journey of just knowing that there's going to be more. There's going to be more food. There's going to be more of the foods that I enjoy. There's going to be more pizza with friends. And I think that kind of concept of abundance is exactly what you're saying. There's going to be more of these moments, but what really brings us to enjoying that moment is truly our full presence. And so sometimes even like there's this sort of like preemptive grief that can prevent us from even being fully present in the moment. Have you experienced that too?
Of just
like, oh my gosh, I already know that this is going to end. So yeah, I'm already 100%. Kind of like in my head about it, but I want to be fully here and enjoy it the most I can. That's kind of like this catch-22, right? But it's like, if we can be more grounded and present in just what is, recognizing that there is room for abundance of either it's, you know, food or connection or more of what we're actually feeling or discovering we need. Maybe that's what could build more trust with ourselves to really know that there could be more similar experiences.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm just thinking like we're going on vacation in a few weeks, and I'm remembering, you know, as soon as I get to vacation, right, I'm like, okay, we only have 6 more days. You know, like I'm already like counting down the end, and it's like, yeah, it takes you out of that present moment, but having, you know, I'm thinking to myself like, okay, yeah, remember this conversation in that time, because it's so tempting to, where the scarcity mindset comes from. I don't know if it's a learned thing or if it's a human trait that sometimes we're trained to see that or to expect that, maybe to prepare ourselves in some way. But, but that there is in reality, I think, and it is a matter of learning to trust it, that there is an abundance and that there will be a return. And this is true for so many things. Like even for like, you must feel this way sometimes with creativity and just like the way you are with your business and with your
money.
Podcast topics. Right. I mean, like, I'm sure there's times where I'm like, I think I'm running out of ideas. And there's always more that come. And it's sort of this, you know, I think if you pay attention and you trust that this will this is, there's a flow to this. There's a method to this madness. Then maybe not clinging so tightly to the idea that you have to hold on to something because it will leave you, can allow you to be more present with it because you trust that it will return. It's hard. It's easier to say than to do.
Right.
I think it's a mentality shift of acknowledging and of reaffirming to yourself that there is enough, you know, there's enough of joy or connection or food or meaning, work, all of it to continue.
Money, creativity, if we can be less resistant and more in flow, even in periods of loss. Yeah. You know, to wrap up this conversation just entirely, I think you'll resonate with this, but it all comes back down to just like body attunement and validation, right? Like, what would it feel like if in these moments, or like, you know, say, I'm so envying you're going on vacation. I'm like, oh my gosh, vacation. That sounds amazing. That sounds awesome. But, you know, kind of being on vacation, if we put ourselves in that mindset, you know, it's like, oh, I knew I would probably be feeling this way. Yeah. I felt this way before in a similar situation. This is what I did then. I can recognize this feeling. I know this feeling. Now I can just know, okay, do I need to talk to somebody about this feeling? How can I cope with this feeling in a way that makes me feel more complete and whole in this very moment? Maybe it's breath work. Maybe it's eating. Maybe it's connecting with another person. There are many things that we can do to kind of bring us from that state back into our window of tolerance, as you mentioned, back into our grounded, more centered, responsive, authentic state. But I think it's fun to like just recognize and say, oh my gosh, hello grief, I yeah. know that you're loving this moment right now, so am I, you know. I see yeah. you, and I know that you don't want this to leave, but it's gonna yeah. leave. This moment cannot yeah. last forever, but I'm mm-hmm. with you in this moment, and we can have more moments of like this if we can trust in ourselves to know that we can invite more of this into our life in some way. I think that it comes to that body attunement, recognizing, validating, yeah. as you're saying, and being able to acknowledge and feel so that we can move on. Do you feel that body attunement is a big piece of this whole puzzle?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I was talking about this also recently of how you're so good with body attunement and getting into your body. Like, I know that's one of your strengths and that you've worked on that.
Yes.
And for me, that was always an extreme, and it is for me a really hard thing to do. And I feel like I attune to my body and my mind more than in my body. Right. So like my intellect will grab whatever's going on in my body and make sense of it here mm-hmm. versus in my body. But, and this being one of those things, cause I think that I'll do all this inner chatter around like, okay, this one positive, but there's an intuition that comes from the body, which I'm learning right now that like, I may not necessarily perceive in a sensory way, but there's some kind of knowing that I think has come from just recognizing patterns like this, saying I've been here before, what happens next? I know where this goes. And that cultivates some kind of trust in your body and trust in the moment and trust in your life that I feel like when you spoke those words, like I was, yes, that is something to hold on to. That is something that you can say like, yeah, I get it. We're in this together and don't worry. It will come back. You know, this is not the end. There's yeah. so much relief in that. And I think there's like a calm to that. And I think that's what happens is when we have these emotions that feel flooding, it like gives you a rise. And it's, I mean, for me, maybe I am connected to my body. I don't know. I feel it in my like, you know, upper body and I'm like, oh gosh, you know, and then it's,
yes.
and then it just can calm you down to think like, no, this is part of the human experience. It's not something abnormal. I mean, maybe some people don't experience as intensely, which is, I think, where, you know, why the signals got crossed, because maybe it wasn't, you know, made known to us or modeled before us before. But that yes, this is something that exists for me and it exists for other people too. And it will return as it should. And if we're present, it probably has more likelihood of returning because we're more connecting in that moment too.
Mm-hmm. And when we're more connected in that moment and we recognize the feeling, we can, instead of dismissing that feeling for you, maybe the flightiness in like your chest or your upper body, it's just like, oh, this feeling has been here before. I know this feeling.
Yeah.
oh, hello again. I know this must mean that you're really enjoying this moment, but you're also worried that it'll pass. I'm here for you in this moment. I'm recognizing this. You can invite in this fairly like nurturing voice instead of this void, you know, or instead of getting an overwhelm in the mind. And I know, so I do this too, Stephanie, where it's just like, oh, you know, the overwhelm happens and the head spin happens with trying to just like make sense of it or calm it down, because I think that's what we're taught, right? Just like, okay, calm down, yeah. Move on. But instead of like, oh, I feel this thing. Oh, it'll pass. All right, what can we do to be more present in this moment and to move on to the next thing? What do we need for support or to cope? You've given so much clarity to this conversation today. And I think body attunement is really like the cherry on the top that can help us not feel threatened by the experience, but to actually feel a sense of like calm in the experience, to more fully enjoy it. Because I think that's what we ultimately want, to hold on to it totally. In some way.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, even just speaking about it, it's like, yeah, that there's a calming sense to acceptance and to recognition that it's not, it's that what you're feeling is, I mean, gosh, it's like, of course you want to connect and further your joy. Like this is something, of course we would want to, it makes sense to want to hold on to it. But also maybe correcting the synapse, you know, that maybe that arose somewhere to that taught us that it wouldn't, that it was fleeting and forever, you know, that it was some kind of permanent impermanence, and that reaffirming that that's not, that we're it's okay now, like we will experience joy again, and we will experience connection again, or even food again. I mean, the people that I've worked with so many times who forget almost when we talk about like, you will have another meal, like there'll be more. If this meal wasn't perfect, the next one will, you know, you have many opportunities. And I'm like, oh yeah. You know, it's like you forget that this isn't your last hurrah. And you know, just sort of being able to say that to yourself as an adult, you know, or as like somebody with a more evolved sense, and say, no, that may have been how you integrated this belief at some point because you didn't, weren't able to download it at another point in your life. You know, maybe now we can relook at this and say, you're safe. It's okay. Like this will, this things rise and fall, but they will return. And, I think there's calm, there's so much calm in that. There's a real sense of like soothing in that.
Absolutely. And I think we can give ourselves also, this is just coming to me, like permission to revisit the joy. My husband, I mentioned, I think that, you know, as we're having this conversation, I hope he listens to this episode, because I think he'll, I think my husband, I mean, we see it most in the people that we love and we're around the most, right? My husband's the guy like taking pictures like you wouldn't believe. His whole camera roll, if it's a nice sunset, there's going to be 50 sunsets in that camera roll that he can visit every moment of it dropping, right?
Yeah.
And so I love that about him, because he really wants to like capture that moment. But you know, whether we want to revisit the experience, reminisce, right? Maybe we need permission to reminisce, take photos on your vacation or journal during it, or explain, you know, what happened or the day, or there are moments that we can jump back. And this is why history is so important. Our experience is so important. We can revisit our honeymoons, or we can revisit our wedding days, or, you know, we can revisit these times in our life where we maybe have felt that grief, because we can still celebrate those same things. And so even though they're fleeting, our memories are so strong and powerful too. And even great meals. Oh my gosh. Yes. We want that meal not to end. Right. But I mean, are you thinking about, you know, that amazing meal that you had last month? Like, no, like you've totally moved on, you know? But I'm saying, like, offer yourself, like if it was really the best experience ever, journal about it, write it down, document it. What was it about? You can like revisit, so you can continue to like offer yourself at least the option to reconnect with that feeling or that emotion. What is that bringing up for you?
Yes. Because what you're talking about is so true. And I think you sort of alluded to it before too, around like what you're trying to revisit is not necessarily that sunset or that honeymoon or that, you know, or that outfit, which again, with body image, I think that we tend to you know, the when we felt the most confident, right? When we lost this weight and we looked this way and we assign all this meaning to that time, like it was this great fantasized moment. But what we were really experiencing in that moment was perceived confidence or attention and these things, right? And that's what we're holding on to. And I think it's important to remember that what you are grieving or what you are appreciating and not wanting to let go of isn't what you're identifying with. It's not the things, it's not the place, it's not the food, it's not the body. It's the, it's what that provided you. And those things are accessible anytime. So it's not like you cannot experience the joy of your honeymoon unless you're in Hawaii or wherever you were on your honeymoon.
Right.
Or, you know, it's not like you can only access confidence when you look a certain way. You are attaching some kind of meaning to it because those are the conditions of that feeling.
Yeah.
But the feeling is what you're after. It's not the things. And I think that's sometimes where we get tripped up, where it's like, if I don't have it this particular way again, if these are not the circumstances again, I no longer have access to the feelings that surrounded it. When really, the feelings can occur anytime. Those feelings are, I mean, how many times when I've been on vacation and it's been like, oh yeah, this is the best. I never want this to end. And then a couple of weeks later, when we're home and we're, you know, having dinner together, like there's another moment like that. And we're not, certainly not on vacation. And there's like homework to be done. And there's all these mundane things happening, but it's like, but there's a moment of like relaxation and pure joy that comes with just being with my family and connecting with them, that's the thing. Those are the things. And I don't think that those are exclusive to these moments that we assign them to necessarily.
Oh my gosh. Which brings us back to the thought that it's like, oh, it's not actually about our bodies or our body size. It's actually not about the food. It's not about the clothes. It's not about the sunset, the wedding day, the honeymoon, the vacation. It's about like our core values, dang it.
Yeah.
And the things that we really love and want more of in our life, that really shows us who we are. That's like us connecting with like the deepest, wholest parts of ourselves. Let's celebrate that, you know?
Yeah.
And then we can find more joy in the everyday by recognizing the things that we grieve to then, as you said, like there's this rebirth, there's the next phase, spring will come again. It's like this, oh my gosh, this grief is reconnecting me with my core values. I know what I want more of in my life now, and I'm going to go after that. That's like so inspiring.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that you connected it to core values because essentially, right, that is what's happening. Yeah. It's a reflection of your core value. When you're experiencing this way, it's like, what is happening in that moment that you value so much that it's so hard to let go of, and then seek that. Yeah. Rather than the identifying factors around it. Yeah, for sure. That's so powerful.
How do you think this could help our improving our relationships of food and body? This concept of identifying core values, not recognizing it's not the food, not the body, not the clothes.
Yeah. I mean, this is something we talk inevitably what food and body conversations always come down back down to values. I feel like with all of my clients, we end up talking about what are your values, because a lot of times in recovery from identifying with food and body, we have to redefine what they are. And so I think just using these opportunities as windows into what matters to you, honestly, I have found is the way forward. Because I mean, I remember as I was healing my relationship with food and body, and somebody asked me like, well, what lights you up? What brings you joy? And I couldn't answer. I didn't know. And I think, you know, I'd spent so long believing it, no, food and body, like it's that, those are the things, this is what I was convinced of. And I didn't know anything beyond that. And I started to pay attention with the help of my coach. I started to pay attention to, well, when am I having these moments of feeling like I'm alive, like the flow moments, you know, the moments where I'm like, I'm not even thinking about the way I look or what I'm eating next. I am just living and like, I'm in full, you know? And those are the moments that can give you insight into that's what you're living for, you know? And that's what we're trying to pursue here, instead of using the veil of, you know, your weight to get you there. There's a more direct route. And I don't mean an easy route, because it's really hard to tap into like your purpose or your meaning or what gives you, you know, what makes you light up inside. But I think it's a worthwhile journey to start looking at and to start noticing, like, what are those things even? Because you've probably spent a long time thinking that it's about a body size bringing you that, when these moments are happening in your life outside of, you know, outside of that context.
And that's why, like, we're here at the kitchen table, Stephanie, because it's like, how can we invite more joy and purpose and love and meaning to our life? Well, it takes kind of sifting through some of this food and body stuff, so we have better access to the things that we really more deeply want, that we can have without changing our bodies or without getting healthier, actually, in any respect. I mean, most times we can have access to a lot of that right now. And so I thank you so much for bringing that up to the surface, because it's actually, wow, such a realization when it's like, wow, it actually doesn't have to be about weight loss for the rest of my life. It doesn't have to be about dropping another dress size or going to the gym every day. It doesn't have to be about the regimen. It can be about something that connects me more deeply to myself and to others. And that is just rooted in love. It has to be. It has to be rooted in love. And so I'm so glad that we had this conversation on the show today, because I think it's a really impactful conversation that I think that we don't talk about, if at all, enough. And so thank you so much. Can you share with everybody, you know, any residual thoughts that you have, and also, you know, where they can find you, where they can connect with you and potentially work with you after realizing how personal and fun and real you are? They're like, oh, we want more of Stephanie. So please share with them.
I will. But I also love that you brought it back to love and joy, because it's like the conversation started out as grief, and it comes back to reflecting like what you love and value and what brings you joy. And that's so true. Full circle. Love it. I am Stephanie Michelle on Instagram and Facebook. And also I am StephanieMichelle.com is my website. And I offer one-on-one coaching around binge eating and body image and diet culture recovery. And I am also currently signing up. I have a waitlist going right now for a group that I'm going to be running on emotional eating and emotional binging outside of restriction. So the things very in line with what we're talking about today in terms of what things, what emotions and what suppressed emotions might be fueling your binge eating. And, you know, when it's not restriction, that's at play.
Amazing. Sign up for Stephanie's waitlist. Follow her on Instagram. Stephanie, I look forward to you coming on the show again. Is that okay to say? Oh, will you come back?
Yes, I will always come back.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being on the show. Everyone, I hope you have a marvelous, marvelous Thursday. Otherwise, we'll see you on next Monday's episode. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.